Then it all stopped, the sensation of acceleration, the sound in my head, and the feeling of imminent death. My heart had calmed, and I was breathing normally. There was one big difference here, though. I was sitting now on some sort of hard bench. Where the hell am I? Oddly enough, the panic had vanished. I was alive, and I guess that was enough. Concentrating hard, I tried to move my eyelids. Slowly I was able to open my eyes. The first thing I saw was that I was leaning against a table. It wasn't any normal table, it was a flat TV or maybe a big, blank computer screen. I seemed to be in some sort of dimly lit room. I could only look ahead, though. I had no peripheral vision. The room smelled sulfurous, like rotting eggs. It was warm and humid. I was still unable to move, and my thoughts seemed to be in slow motion. When I realized I could raise my head, I saw that there was a wall about 8 feet in front of me, a wall holding another, smaller video screen. I strained to get up, but I couldn't. I could only move my head up and down, so I could only see that strange table, that wall screen, and the light from nowhere yet everywhere, which was a dim white. I sensed I wasn't alone in that room. Some kind of tingling awareness made me cognizant of activity to either side, but when I tried to look, I couldn't turn my head to the right or left. When I gazed down again, I noticed I could slightly move the wrist and forefinger of my right hand. When I moved my 4 off an 18, dream, it's just a dream girl. It left a gray line or trail on that glass screen table, almost as if my finger were a pencil and the surface was some kind of electronic paper. I smelled something ancient and foul. There was the hum of some kind of energy subtly surrounding everything. It felt as though I were deep in the guts of some very old computer. Why am I here? What the hell is this all about? I thought. The fear was coming back, in a different, dreadful flavor. I didn't know if I could speak aloud or not because I was too frightened to try. Then my head went up, moved by some force other than myself. My eyes involuntarily fixed on that gray wall screen. In the middle of my head, I heard a voice say, "You will learn this." This voice did not vibrate my eardrums. God. I can't possibly describe my alarm as each separate word rang through my head. The sensation was so very odd. I know the concept now, telepathy, direct mind-to-mind contact. Not only that, but as each word was enunciated, I saw a word appear on that wall screen. A word not in English, but in some strange language. I heard the voice again, "You will learn this." I didn't know where I was or why I was there. And here was some booming voice in my head telling me what to do. I guess my Italian emotions took over here, because instead of becoming more frightened, I felt anger and rage. "No, I won't." The sentence burst from my mouth and surprised me. Definite sounds, yes, much different than that neutral, antiseptic voice booming in my brain. The letter A appeared on the wall screen. 19, the keeper's dream, it's just a dream shown by a force with no compassion or understanding of my feelings. I would not cooperate with this kind of bizarre coercion. "No," I repeated. Again, the letter A appeared, and this time the air pressure changed in the room. It pushed against my head and my ears, becoming quite painful. My heart pounded again. I could taste fear again, body fear, fear of more pain that might come. Everything tightened and I was quite uncomfortable. I sensed that this discomfort would continue unless I cooperated. Unless I drew that alien on the screen. Still, I can be a stubborn man. "No," I said. "What kind of stupid school is this? I don't know who you are, or why I'm here, and I'm not going to write your damn letter." The alien reappeared. Thump. The air pressure increased, upping my discomfort and anxiety. I knew that unless I obeyed, it would go up again. I was still angry though. And maybe something about wanting to remember these experiences made me hang on to that pain. "No," I said, "I won't do it." I could bear only so much, though. After the next level of agony, it felt as though I were about to die. I cried out, "I don't want to die." I looked down at the table screen. With my right forefinger I traced the first stroke for their version of the letter A. Instantly the air pressure dropped. Quickly, My heart rate dropped down toward normal. The anxiety and the fear faded. Moreover, I felt euphoric. The contrast was remarkable. A very pleasant sensation flooded me. Figure 4, learning alien letters. Next to it was some strange hieroglyph. Somehow I sensed that it was supposed to be another language's equivalent. The alien letter faded, and then traced itself out again, as though to instruct me on its formation. I grasped immediately that I was supposed to write the alien letter out on the table screen before me with a forefinger. No, I said. It was worse than any school. It was worse than being told by a teacher what to do. It was a strange omnipresent intimida, 20, 21. The keepers, the message was plain: cooperate and feel good, refuse and receive pain. But they didn't seem to think I'd learned that lesson yet. A, said the voice. The alien appeared on the screen. Simultaneously, the air pressure went foom, and a low level of discomfort ran through my body. I was still stubborn, though, and still determined to take this to the maximum. After a half a dozen levels of increased pressure and discomfort, I couldn't take it anymore. I copied the second stroke to this odd interpretation of the letter A. Euphoria. As I sat there in this artificially relaxed state, I attempted to move, but my body was still completely paralyzed, my vision was a complete blur. Anger stabbed through the pleasant feeling again. Who are you bastards? I demanded. You don't have the right to do this to me. The telepathic response came back. We have the right. We always have. We always will. That declaration had a touch of finality to it. I sensed it was time to go, that this portion of the lesson was done. Sure enough, my eyes closed even though I willed them to remain open. That whirling sound came again, and I felt the pressing of G-forces, of acceleration. All the terrifying cycles of this process unfurled, and I found myself lying flat on my face. The softness of my own bed, the smell of my clean sheets, and the hushed bedroom air surrounded me like a gentle balm. It was still night, but dawn light was beginning to filter through the curtains. I was back in my own bed. Beside me was Teresa's still, comforting form. Her smell and hair spilled upon the pillow. Teresa didn't wear makeup. She didn't need to. She, dream, it's just a dream, smelled sweet and clean, and she had on her worn, long cotton nightgown, the one she always wore, the one I always liked. Gratified that I was able to move, I got out of bed and turned on the light. Yes, definitely, there was Teresa, sleeping. This was home. This was safety. What, though, had happened? I slapped myself. Again, harder. I was awake. This was no dream. The funny thing was that despite the sound of my slapping and all the ruckus I was making, Teresa had not roused, despite being a light sleeper. I knew quite well that even the slightest sound, light or movement wakes her up. Concerned, I leaned over and touched her. No response. Then I shook her slightly. She didn't wake. I shook her harder, and it was then that I noticed something on my hands. On the back of my hands were several small cuts that had not been there the day before. These cuts, however, were closed over and pink, not red with blood. They were almost healed, but they had not been there the day before. I was worried about Teresa. I shook her some more, maybe getting a little frenzied, a little panicky. Anyway, I knew she was alive when she moaned. She was stone asleep, though, and short of maybe throwing some cold water on her, I couldn't get her out of her stupor. The digital numbers on the clock claimed I'd been gone about 2 hours. I went back to bed, but I couldn't go back to sleep. When Teresa woke up, she did so just as she always did, groggily but without any other trouble. Lying awake, I'd considered unburdening myself about my bizarre experience. But, staring at her over the eggs, bacon and coffee, I just couldn't. I hid myself in the paper. It was just too much to believe in the cold, jittery, painful morning. 22, 23. The keepers. The rest of the day I was a basket case. I thought the light of day, some lunch, a few real estate calls, and some number crunching would straighten me out, but by the time dinner, which I barely touched, was over, I started feeling even worse. Looking out at the dark made me feel cold, alone, and upset. I felt aftershocks of the fear, from the aches and discomfort I'd felt the previous night. I got through some TV and banal monotone chatter with Teresa, and she conked out at midnight. The whole idea of going to sleep again was just horrific. I just sat on the sofa, thinking, I'm a logical guy. I'm a rational fellow. What took place last night doesn't make sense. How can I tell Teresa? How can I tell anybody? First of all, they won't believe me. Second, it just sounds like nonsense. Unfortunately, I had a business trip to North Carolina planned for the next morning. Should I take Teresa along to hold my hand? Just say, hey, could you come and keep me company? North Carolina is getting creepy. More than that, I was wondering if this house was safe. If I left her alone, maybe those things, whatever they were, would come and play intergalactic alphabet with her. She wouldn't be safe. Rationally, some part of me was assured that she'd be in no danger. I had the feeling that these creatures were after me, not her. The idea of getting away seemed vital. Besides, then I could talk to Jim Johnson, who was a close business friend of mine. I found I'd been able to discuss things with him that I couldn't talk about with other people. Why not strange presences forcing me to learn alien letters? I met Jim Johnson over 20 years ago in Jacksonville, Florida. He was my first sales manager. He didn't like me at first because I was new at selling and my hair was a bit long. Jim tried to get rid of me by assigning me impossible sales territories. To his surprise, I closed every deal he sent me on. As he got to know me, he got to like me, and since then we've been friends. Jim speaks with a deep southern drawl and reminds me of a southern plantation owner or General Robert E. Lee. His wife, 24, Dream, it's just a dream. Peggy is a lovely woman with a sweet southern voice. Like Lee, Jim has white and gray hair and a beard. Peggy is petite with long, reddish hair. They had their own real estate brokerage company, but our partnership was pine straw. When he or Peg sold my lots, they got a percentage. If I was going to make that trip to see my partners, though, I sure was going to need some rest. Somehow, with the help of a glass of beer, I went to sleep on the sofa. When I awoke, the luminous hands of the clock on the wall said it was 3:30 a.m. Why always 3:30? I thought. I felt a wave of paralyzing fear. It was deja vu with a different view. Not again, I thought. I was frozen solid. I simply couldn't move. My whole body was so tight, I could hardly breathe or swallow. Then came a different sensation, a feeling that's difficult to describe. It felt as though I were being bathed in a field of intense static electricity. Only one other time had this powerful unnatural sensation occurred, on that strange Bentian screen room the night before. Only now I was in my own living room. I tried to scream, but I couldn't open my mouth. I thought, oh God, I can tell they are close. Who was close? And how would I know? Echoed another part of me. Then, all of a sudden, on the living room wall a green glow appeared. It was almost like a cloud roiling there between a couple of picture frames. It expanded and contracted, then it began to take form. For an instant, that green cloud looked like a hairless two-dimensional stick man with large, unforgettable eyes. Then it shifted into what seemed like a hologram of an owl, a green and ghostly owl. 25, The Fringe of Sanity, Chapter 3, 80s, I was too busy finding and selling real estate to think too much about it. Later, however, because of specialists who helped me understand that I was not alone in these experiences, I learned that while every abductee has his own unique encounters with aliens, there are some elements of the abduction phenomenon that keep recurring. For instance, this translucent owl, which gave me the feeling of the presence of a great wisdom. Now, whether or not that was because I'd always thought about owls as symbols of wisdom, I don't know. My friend, Tim, from my alien abductee support group, which I didn't join, alas, until years after my first experiences, told me owls figured prominently in Whitley Strieber's communion. Strieber saw lots of owls in the woods by his cabin where he had many of his abduction encounters. The visitors like symbols, I guess. to me, it soon became apparent what this spectral owl signified. It meant school. It meant time for class. I got to know it as a symbol meaning, get ready to learn, Jim Sparks. Almost every time the visitors take me, they show me a symbol. Perhaps it keys off some kind of subliminal response in my psyche. I gather from my abductee brothers and sisters that Whitley Strieber's thoughts on owls have gone very deep in the abductee mindset. For me, though, it was simple, a representation or symbol of an owl meant to adjust my mindset to learn. It's become obvious to me that there are subtle shadings of meaning introduced with the alteration of these holographic forms. That night, though, sitting on my couch staring at that perched owl with large, strange, round eyes, horns, feathers, beak and talons staring down at me, you can bet I wasn't paging through Freud's book about dream meanings. The fringe of sanity, as I mentioned before, I had never read any books or magazines about the kinds of experiences I was having. I avoided anything associated with UFOs. Before my experiences, I simply wasn't interested. Afterwards, I purposefully did not read any literature or see any movies or TV shows on the subject, because I didn't want to confuse or cloud any of my experiences with suggestions or anything else. Despite my terror, despite my confusion, inside of me burned a stubborn urge to know, to understand what was happening to me on my own terms. Now, I wonder if that was the right choice. I might have found a lot of comfort by going for help to the right people immediately. However, I did not. Perhaps this was why I had the kind of experience that I had, and why the visitors were so interested in me. They were working with someone unprejudiced by immediate cultural or scientific interpretations of what was happening to him. Mind you, just because I wasn't into UFOs then didn't mean that I didn't think there could be other intelligent life in the universe. Before being abducted, in fact, I took a logical common sense approach to the whole business. It didn't take much thought to realize that there are billions and billions of stars out there, and that there was a damned good probability of planets around many of those stars. So more life in the universe? Why not? And there was no reason that other life forms wouldn't visit our planet, if they knew about it. I guess in the 26, 27, the keepers my body finally relaxed. Though I could move, I felt completely drained of energy, exhausted. Enough of this, I thought. I have to get some sleep. Somehow, strangely enough, despite the adrenaline pumping through me, I slept. How long I slept, I cannot say. Abruptly, I was snatched from slumber. I felt like I was strapped into that invisible rocket again and hurtled toward the moon. Anyone who's been on a roller coaster, or even a rapidly accelerating car, has felt G-forces, and this was rough, heavy-duty acceleration. Maybe worse than before. I honestly thought it would kill me this time. Again, there was the room, the bench, those screens, and the faintly acrid, neutral smell of the place. Again, I felt the warm and humid air, then the slight chill. Mercifully, the G-forces stopped, and I caught my breath. I breathed raggedly, angry and confused. Once more, I had tunnel vision. I had to look directly at something to see it. Even as I was recovering, maybe even thinking of just getting up and hurtling away from this madness if I could, something walked across that line of vision. One of my captors, one of those short people. The first time I saw one of the visitors, I noted how slender its body was, and how large its head was. It kind of moved strangely, too, like Gumby, as though it had a different kind of bone structure, maybe more cartilage than bone. It wasn't wearing clothing, but somehow it didn't look particularly naked either. That head though. If I weren't scared silly, I think I might have laughed. It looked ludicrous, like some elf's head. It had these great big eyes like slanted rounded jewels. I didn't need a PhD in biology to see that it wasn't human. But then it was gone. I held on to my anger. I pitted it against my fear and I cried out, "You bastards aren't human. Who are you? What are you?" The fringe of sanity, the non-human being, had gone back into the shadows, and my head was jerked back to stiffly face my assignment. Dead center in the screen, strange lines of symbols formed. Before each one appeared, A telepathic alien voice sounded in my head. "I am," that voice said. Then, a symbol for what I guessed represented each individual involved would fade in for a moment, and then disappear, like some spirit roll call. The funny thing was that the voice in my head always sounded the same, even though each individual symbol was unique. I don't know if I'll ever get used to it, but in all the years these guys have been talking to me, never once have I heard them use any kind of vocal cords for communication. They always communicate directly with my brain. The voice sounds deep inside of me, all-knowing, unbearably intimate. Each time I saw one, I'd get a quick jolt of adrenalized fear, as I waited for the voice to resonate inside of me. It felt like a jealous god of your pronouncing law. These name symbols continued, each preceded by a deep I am that had all the authority that the burning bush had to Moses. Then the voice said, "You are." My name, in English script, appeared. Beside it was my name in alien symbols. The flow and form of the alien symbols were quite beautiful. Amidst the fear, I felt a kind of awe that I didn't feel was artificially induced at all. The alien version of my name disappeared and that voice pronounced in my head, "You will learn this." Then the letter E appeared. Next to it was the alien equivalent. At the time I thought it was a conversion from our 29-28, the Keeper's alphabet to theirs. I'm no linguist, but I figure that just because the English alphabet has 26 letters doesn't mean that alien creatures from wherever have an alphabet or language of their own that directly corresponds to our alphabet. However, for some reason, this was the way they taught. There must have been some other kind of process going on inside my mind, and this was the way I interpreted it in a literal kind of way. Whatever, these guys sure were working on my wiring. The thing that struck me about the process was that they never, ever said, "We'd really like you to learn this," or "Would you learn this, please?" It was always, "You will learn this." This coercion fired me up. I think it countered the fear and helped me keep my sanity. I must say, though, I didn't feel like going through that pressurization business again, so I started tracing out that alien symbol on the electronic etch-a sketch. I did a few of these symbols as best I could, and it got less scary, because they were hitting me with the euphoric stuff again, I guess. I mustered up some courage, and I squeaked out, "Who are you people?" The voice responded, "We are star people." I realize now they were teaching the fundamentals of telepathy, something all of us are capable of learning. "Star people," I thought to myself. What's that supposed to mean? It sounded kind of cheesy, like something out of a bad sci-fi movie from the 50s. Even the name upset me. It was like they were treating me like some monkey moron. Then I felt the whirling, swirling and pain, and I was whisked away from Star People School and plopped back into my bed, with an Earth human flavor of reality in a place called Houston, Texas. 30. Chapter 4, Falling Fast. The next morning I was to leave for North Carolina, and was furious when I awoke. I managed to get through a hot shower and sausage and eggs, but not even a cup of strong Colombian coffee made me feel better. In the past months, the concept of being abused by aliens had entered my mind, but I was in denial about it. After my previous night's experience, I was not only convinced of their otherworldly identity, I was also totally unnerved and offended at a core level about their methods, intentions and air lack of compassion for humans, including their treatment of me. The morning of my Carolina trip, I managed to get off with a kiss for Teresa and not much else. I mean, what was I supposed to say? "See you next week, dear. Oh, and by the way, I was hustled off again by star people who are teaching me an alien primer. North Carolina is a lovely place, quite a contrast to Houston." The gorgeous foliage of the trees greeted me, and the sweet smell of the cold, bracing air seemed to snap some of the ear out of me as I arrived. This was central east North Carolina, hilly with winding roads through lots of woods, which caused me to get lost more than once. I stayed at my friend Jim Johnson's house the trip, and it was good to be around him. My nights were untroubled, and my boiling mind calmed somewhat as I immersed it in work. 31. The Keepers, Falling Fast. A couple of days later, Sitting around with Jim and listening to some music after a hard day's work, I felt comfortable enough to broach the subject with him. I gave him a brief overview of what I'd been through. Needless to say, he was very concerned. "Sounds like some sort of devil cult. That, or you're losing your mind." He took a drink from his tinkling glass of iced tea as though he wished it was something stronger. I assured him there was nothing devilish about it. It just didn't feel that way. It was scary, sure, but not in a spiritual or demonic kind of way. "You've known me for years," I said. "I'm a pretty level-headed guy, right? I haven't been in and out of a shrink's office, and I don't make things up. Jim's the salt of the earth, a big, burly guy, middle-aged with that North Carolina drawl distinguished with an occasional stutter. He moves gracefully, and boy, does he love his music. He's a great jitterbug dancer, too. He grew up with a slew of famous 50s rock and blues musicians amidst poverty and obscurity, but he never became a musician himself." "Yes, guy. But aliens?" "I don't know what to say," Jim said. I could understand his reaction. On one hand, it was great to talk about it and let it out. Unfortunately, even as I spoke, I realized how totally absurd it all sounded. I didn't want Jim to think I was crazy. At first, I allowed that maybe I'd been working too hard and was having delusions, but even as I spoke, I knew I was lying. I got angry at the situation and myself. "Bullshit," I said as I spilled my drink. "I'm not crazy. And these weren't delusions. These are things happened. Period." Jim was taken aback, but he recognized the real me all right. "Whether it happened or not, you seem to believe it happened. That's going to have to be good enough for me." 32. He kind of cocked an eyebrow and said, "I hope whatever the hell is going on with you doesn't happen here." I chuckled and felt a little better. "Believe me, if it does, you'll be the first to know." I could tell he simply couldn't accept the reality of it all, but I will say he tried to understand, and he did listen. He just really couldn't wrap his mind around the concept. I really can't blame him, or anyone else. There's not a whole lot of proof around for visits from extraterrestrial life. There is, however, plenty of evidence for lapses in human sanity. Still, of all people, I was really hoping against hope that Jim would be the one who would believe me, no matter what, but of all my friends, Jim Johnson tried the hardest. That trip to North Carolina lasted 10 days, and I didn't get dragged off to Star People's School, which was fortunate indeed. I didn't get near the subject again with Jim, as I could tell it made him feel uncomfortable. I just savored my sanity, wrapped myself in work and North Carolina, and got some vital rest. I tried to eat right and exercise. The house was a large and comfortable ranch home with a big kitchen, where Jim loves to cook. By the time I left, Jim wasn't giving me strange glances. Hell, I wasn't giving myself strange glances. I felt better, ready to face Texas again. I wish I could say that it worked out okay. The smell, the taste, the presence of my own bedroom back at home got to me. I simply couldn't sleep there. The first night back I tossed and turned, and this time Teresa was not in a stupor. I ended up on the living room sofa again. During the third sofa night, after days and nights of apprehension, the visitors came again, whirling, acceleration. My butt thumped on that bench. I saw the screens. I tasted the peculiar, ancient taste in my mouth, and I felt the warm mustiness of that room around me. And then the 33, the keepers, falling fast. By now, I knew what I was going to do. Letting my anger override my fear, I concentrated. Carefully, with my finger I sketched out that alien symbol for A, just as they seemed to want me to do. Good. The word appeared on the alien screen. Simultaneously, that's just the way I felt, good. The fear left, the pain left, and a blessed relief poured through my veins, refreshing and pure. I think, there in that somewhere else place I actually smiled grimly to myself. I've got you figured out. You bastards are trying to brainwash me. I was feeling pretty smug, and I didn't really think they'd respond. But they did respond and quickly. No. The word appeared on the screen. Simultaneously, It reverberated in my head, and wiped the smile off my face. It didn't keep my mouth closed though. Sure, that's why you're doing this. Admit it.